the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to the world's greatest podcast known as Courtside. I am Seth Greenberg. He is the one, the only, the squared Dan Dokic, the man of many hats. And you know what? D-squared, let me tell you something. I have to admit, because I don't admit you're going to tell me anyway, so what's the difference? So you might as well admit and just take your poison. You were right on Iowa. Now, I have a question for you. How were you right on Iowa? Why did you know this? Are you like the all great Jedi? I mean, what is the knowledge in that chrome dome of yours that you could predict this?
I didn't really predict it, Seth. It's just the way the Big Ten is. People like don't understand the Big Ten. The Big Ten is not like every other league where you get a few players and all of a sudden you win the league. There is a psychology behind the Big Ten. And I'm telling you, Iowa, for whatever the reason, has never fully thrown themselves into basketball, and it's weird. Now, that doesn't make any sense to anybody. And it's like,
this by throwing yourself into basketball. I don't get that.
All right, you go to Indiana, and you're the head coach. The only person you got to keep, and maybe you don't even have to keep him, is Tim Garland, the trainer. Maybe you can get rid of him. I don't know. You go to Iowa. When Alford went there, he had to keep an assistant, Rich Walker. He had to keep Jerry Schramm, the ops guy. No, you don't. When you go to a place like that, if you're getting and making a coaching change, you just literally throw everything out and you start over. That's one. Two, the Big Ten, if you really think about it, has been one. I don't think Beilein came close to winning a Big Ten title. Now, I could be wrong. Maybe he won one. But he was always fifth and fourth. The Big Ten is one with tough defense and toughness. It just is. Like Bo Ryan's teams, Matt Painter's teams, Tom Izzo wins it every freaking year. Bob Knight and Katie always won the damn thing. And it's just what it is. And when you're not built on that, you just don't win the Big Ten. I'm not saying you can't go to the Final Four. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you just don't win the Big Ten. You got to be totally invested, and you got to have a foundation of toughness. Fran's great.
You're saying, so your feelings about Iowa, because you've been pretty strong about Iowa, your feelings about Iowa, are they more Iowa-driven in the relation to the Big Ten, or are they more Iowa-driven in terms of how far they can go in the NCAA tournament?
No, it's relative to the Big Ten. You know, like the Fab Five wasn't even a thought to win the Big Ten. Like, you're like, well, they'll screw it up. And they did. They always did. You always knew they were going to go to the party. Like in Bloomington, when they came to IU, Weber's little guy set up a party and everybody went. So you know you're going to beat them by 20 because they, you know. So, but then they had great success in the NCAA tournament. And that could be the same thing with Iowa. My thing with Iowa and all these teams is strictly conference-based. And I've studied this. I bet you I've studied this longer and harder than anybody other than maybe some journalist guy. I don't know, Bob Hamill. And I'm just telling you, when it's not based on toughness and real toughness, because the Big Ten's no joke with toughness. Now, a lot of teams talk about toughness. Big Ten's no joke with it. I mean, Izzo's teams, as you well know, are no joke with it. Bo's team's no joke with it. Matt's team's no joke with it. So, I think – for whatever the reason, and maybe it's because he played in the league, Juwan Howard's teams, I think, have it. But I'm still, Juwan's team, Michigan, got to go down the stretch and win it. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with COVID. But that's just my feeling with Iowa. Could be wrong. I hope they make a run because I really like the players on the team and I really like Fran. But there were no chance to win the Big Ten until they get that part figured out.
Yeah, I think that you know, look, here's the deal. The Big Ten is a physical league. I mean, you watched that Ohio State game last night against Maryland. I mean, like, Ohio State might be the most physical team in the Big Ten right now. Like, their bodies look different. I mean, like, Kyle Young, you just bounce off of that dude. EJ Liddell, you just bounce off of that dude. I mean, they I wouldn't say the most physical. I'd say they have an edge.
They play, you know, here's the deal. Hey, Seth, I don't – when I talk about toughness, I'm not really talking about physical. The Big Ten, when you go – and this is a little different this year, but when you go into a Big Ten arena, I think you said it on Twitter, it's an event. I mean, it's the biggest crowd you're going to play in all year. And, you know, you don't really have that this year, but that's where the toughness is. I've seen teams go in – hell, we beat Minnesota one time by 51 at home. We went there, and they beat us by 10. You know, I mean, it's just different. So I'm not really – I agree with the physicalness of Ohio State. I do. But I also think this. I think Michigan's pretty physical. I think when you look at those guys up front, I think they're very physical. I think Purdue's very physical. The interesting thing about Ohio State, Seth, is they're physical without really having big guys. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have Caleb Wesson at – you know, 6'10", 250 or whatever, or Andre Wesson at 6'7", 230. They've got, as you said, grown man bodies, but they play a style that, and Chris Holtmann texted me today and said, man, you'd love coaching these dudes because they're everyday guys, man. They're a great group. And that includes the weight room. You can get stronger during the season.
Yep.
You know, or you can lose weight during the season. So I think you're seeing an overall program playing right now in Ohio State, Seth.
I'll tell you. Let me ask you something.
All right?
Ask me something.
Duke, North Carolina. We all jump up and down, stand on our head and poop snowballs about Duke, North Carolina. All right. Compare Duke, North Carolina and the bodies and the physical play with Ohio State.
Oh, it's two different things. I mean, two totally different. I said it all along. The games are just different. I mean, you know, between the Big Ten and the other league. I mean, I really believe that. I mean, I looked at Duke Carolina. To me, what it was so stark to me that, you know, I've been at that game. I've walked in there at noontime and the place was packed. You could feel the energy, the electricity, kind of like probably at Alumni Hall and Assembly Hall and all the facilities, you know, that are in the Big Ten. That game, Duke Carolina, this past weekend, to me, it didn't have an edge. We'd throw a sock at it. Yeah, throw a sock at it. And I don't mean that in a way that the teams didn't try to play hard.
No.
It just wasn't an edge to the game. Yeah, throw a sock. You know, I mean, it just, I mean, and I don't point a finger at a player. I don't point a finger at the coaches. I could point a finger at just, you walk in that facility and it's set up like a scrimmage.
Yeah.
Those kids walked in that facility and there was no energy, ownership, passion, intensity in the building, which takes you maybe to another level. So, I mean, look, Duke Carolina, the ACC in general, and I'm not sure it's completely like this because I look at like Virginia Tech, but has a hard outer shell. The ACC in general has been a skilled, athletic, very skilled, free-flowing league where I look at the Big Ten, and the Big Ten has been built more on taking something away from people, being physical, being tough. Greater ownership from top to bottom. I think that Penn State hurts that a little bit in terms of the environment, but everywhere else, including Nebraska now, great fans when obviously we're out of a pandemic. So, I mean, I just think it's two different leagues. And then you got like the SEC, and that's even another level of, you know, just they're learning how to be basketball fans top to bottom in that league. They're learning to have ownership. They're learning, you know, what a real rivalry is, because let's face it, in that league, Kentucky's a rivalry to everyone. And you Ole Miss and Mississippi State's a rivalry, but I guarantee you, Ole Miss and Mississippi State gets more jacked up to play Kentucky than they do Ole Miss and Mississippi State.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. Tennessee Vanderbilt's a rivalry, but I guarantee you Tennessee looks at Kentucky as their rival. You know, where in the Big Ten, I think the other thing is there obviously there's great rivalries across the board, but there are real rivalries in that game, in that league. I mean, they're real, and you know, it's almost like the teams, they're respectful, but they're fiercely, fiercely competitive. And it's across the league. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You know, I always used to say one of the greatest, if not the best thing about playing basketball in Indiana for Coach Knight is every time you went into a building, it was the biggest crowd of the year, and that was fun. Things have changed now, and you said it. You know, you take out Penn State, really, and everyone's got the same crowd. Everything is packed, which is why I think that toughness is so important. You know, and again, I'm not saying it. I'm just saying there's a different level in the Big Ten when you talk about Izzo, you talk about Purdue, you talk about Wisconsin, you know, those guys over the course of time, you know, somebody sneaks in there. All right, let me go another route with you, all right? Because now we're starting to look at the NCAA tournament. All right, two teams that have a chance, I think, to win a national championship, Baylor and Michigan. Baylor is now postponed 3 more games. Seth, is this year more ripe for somebody to come out of the woodwork and win the national championship? You know, win it. Not, I know getting to the Final Four people have done, but win the thing? Or is this so far beyond, are we so far beyond with Gonzaga and Baylor? But I see Baylor canceling. I see Michigan canceling. Who knows what would happen with Gonzaga?
Here's the deal. Who is not canceling? You got North Carolina now canceling. Yeah, Gonzaga's not canceling. Gonzaga just kind of moves on. They do their thing. They fly on separate planes, allegedly, they go to games in separate buses. I mean, it's amazing the precautions that they're taking. And that goes to my thing about, like, as we move along, how many people are going to risk playing in a conference tournament? But, I mean, that's a different subject. But look, I think that Baylor, depending on, like, here's the thing. Is it a pause or is it a quarantine for all these schools? So, like, if it's a pause and it's contact tracing, then, you know, and maybe certain players have had contact tracing, then at least you're still in the gym. You can still do certain things. You know, if you have the virus and key players have the virus, then you're shut down 14, 17 days in some leagues. Like, I mean – so, I mean, there's a big distinction. I think that if we get into the second week of February, like we get into the 15th and the Baylors are still on pause and the Michigans are still on pause and it's been more than a month, you're going to need, I think, a minimum of 2 weeks to raise your temperature again. You're going to need a minimum of 2 weeks to get your legs back again. You're going to need a minimum of 2 weeks to get that competitive spirit in terms of really grinding out tough wins. Forget about timing offensively. Forget about slippage offensively and defensively, which we know, I don't care how old your team is, you're going to have it. When you say that, so an outlier going to step in, let me ask you something. Where are they? Like Ohio State could be one. Where are the outliers that say, well, you know what? Well, could Drake be one? No, Drake couldn't be one. They're
why?
Good. Why? Because I watched that Valpo game, and I don't think they can do it over 4 nights. I think they're okay. Really good. When they go up in class, I think it's going to be harder. I remember now, and I think Drake's great, and I think they're fun to watch. And Roman Penn is terrific.
You don't? You don't. You don't think Drake's great
in relation to their league? In relation to their league, they're very good. All right, not great. You should never use great. Great's well over it. Jordan, great. LeBron, great. Drake, a nice team and a good conference. Okay?
All right.
Right?
Everybody's going to say Houston. Houston, Carolina.
Houston can't survive their inability to consistently shoot the ball. Look, you're going to rebound the ball against teams you're better than again. You're going to defend, and they have a great win against Texas Tech. They got a good win against Boise. But in the end – under pressure, you got to make some shots.
What about Winthrop?
Too consistently. Not good enough. Just not good. A very good team in that conference. But
what about Creighton?
I'd like to – you know what? I'm up and down on Creighton. I think the X factor Creighton is Zugarowski going to be healthy? Because he's healthy, he's not healthy, he's healthy, he's not healthy.
They all right, what about Texas Tech?
Texas, not Texas Tech as much. I like Texas Tech, and Kevin McCullough has changed them a little bit. Like, since he's been back in the last seven games, especially in the last seven games, they've been better because it's a guy that takes a little pressure off of Matt McClung.
All right.
Harris Shack coming off the bench is another guy that's taking some pressure off Matt McClung. So they're getting
Nobody cares. Nobody knows
their front court.
Nobody knows these things.
Okay, Mr. Rainier, ask me another question.
So who you're the anti-Digger Phelps. Digger Phelps like had 500 guys in the Final Four.
Yeah.
In the Seth Greenberg world, will there be a Final Four, or are we just going to have two?
You know me, I don't think anyone's any good right now.
I know.
I mean, I think there are good teams. They're good.
All right, let me ask you this. Now, Michigan's is not practicing. But they're not practicing. They're not in the gym. And there's a difference between not being in the gym in November, Seth, and now. You know what I mean? They could win the Big Ten without playing any more games. Like, what do you do with that?
I got a question. What do you do that? How do you see the Big Ten tournament? Does everyone go to the Big Ten tournament?
In my world, yes. Because, you know what? In my world, if we're going to play for a ring and legacy, I'm playing. But maybe not. Seth. Like Villanova. Is Villanova any good?
I think they're good. They're far from great. You know, they have really, really struggled defending. I mean, they just don't defend consistently. And I was really surprised in that St. John's game, how St. John's, Posh Alexander, those guys got up and under them and literally just took them out. They punked them. I mean, and it's very rare to see a Villanova team just flat get punked.
But here's why I mentioned Villanova. Okay. I mentioned Villanova because they've already been through the COVID. Do we have to start looking at teams that have been through the COVID already?
I think you've got to look at, I'll tell you, here's what I think you got to look at. I think you got to look at two things. I think you got to look at teams that have had a second pause, because I think a second pause is devastating, because first pause, you can get through, you can kind of reboot. A second pause, when you're shut down for another 14 days, so now you've got like 28, 30 days of maybe a 40 or 50 day period. Man, it's hard to be good that way.
I know. That's why I'm saying this is a year to slip somebody in there.
All right. Who is it? Who are you slipping in?
I told you.
Who?
I gave you Winthrop.
No.
All right.
And I love Pat Kelsey, but no.
I know. All right. Let me ask you this. All right. San Diego State.
San Diego State's interesting because San Diego State, you know, they can rebound, they can defend. Mitchell can shoot a little bit. They're playing really well. They won back-to-back games by 25 points.
What's that?
Back-to-back league games by 25 points.
That's what I'm saying. Every time I watch them, they win by like 50. It's like, whoa. All right. I'll tell you, you were right. I was wrong. I never like saying that. But I'm not.
Get used to it.
I know. I'm not awful on BYU. I'm not You're saying not they're going to win.
I think BYU, first of all, here's my deal. I can't root for Matt Harms, Stephen.
I agree.
I can't do it. I can't. You know, like, here's the thing. Don't. If you want to transfer, transfer. But don't transfer and take little pot shots on the way out the door.
I agree. That's just,
he has a right to transfer. That's fine.
And, Seth, the line last night was 10. They were going to cover. And for some reason, BYU fouled with 6 seconds to go, made it 11. So a lot of people lost money. Some people won money. So you can't root for that either. The six-second down 10 foul. That can't be rooted for. People got to go home. Missouri, we got Konzo Martin on. Missouri, are they a team?
Now, I like Missouri. And, you know, all their analytics will say no. They turn it over for more the assistant. They don't shoot it consistently. I think that they play without fear. And I didn't like the way they handled the ball at the end of the thing. I think that they have a lot of Kunzo in their DNA. They don't give a crap. You know, they're going to take your punch. They're going to guard you. They're going to rebound the ball. They got a low post player in Tillman who can score it. They got 8,000 Smiths that eventually one of them is going to make some shots. I want to know from Kunzo, like, what do you do with all those guys? I mean, Smith. I mean,
Gil Smith. Hey, Smith.
You know, I mean, let me ask you this. Purdue's playing pretty well, right?
Yeah.
All right. So Matty Harms played 16 minutes yesterday, went 0 for 1, had one rebound and two turnovers.
Looked horrible. I mean, hey, Matt said it on my show. Like, hey, we move on. You know, no Jel Eastern. Made up that he was going to Michigan, that he went somewhere else. Now he's getting ready for the draft.
It's sad. Transferring can work out, but it's sad that someone, because I really believe all these kids, like, I don't think kids innately say, you know, oh, coach is mistreating me. That's not my role. I need a bigger role. I think someone gets a hold of these guys and they convince them the static surrounding a player. That's a nice player, but maybe, you know, not the player that person would like him to be. The static can be deafening.
Seth, and sometimes, like in No Jel Eastern, everybody tells me it was his mother. Now, what are you doing? Like, all right. One thing that I do like about what Purdue is doing is exactly what you said. Like, Purdue fans panicked when those two guys left. Purdue just said, look, we got Newman sitting out here. We really like Ivy. I think Ivy's an absolute star in the Big Ten. I think he's really good. And then they just continue on. Now, I'll say this. You would love to have, if you're Purdue, Harms there. Just like, but do you know that both Wessons could have come back to Ohio State? Like Caleb Wesson, I mean – guys make, and it's not just transferring, it's guys make dumb decisions about, and you talk about it all the time, going to the NBA. Like Tyler Lydon, where the hell is Tyler Lydon, the kid from Syracuse? Where the hell is Caleb Wesson? I mean, it's sad, really. It is. I don't like it.
Yeah, it's not getting into the league, it's staying in the league. And speaking of leagues, did you watch any UCLA, USC this weekend?
I did.
Let me ask you this. Are you talk about the Big Ten, we talk about all these different conferences. The Pac-12's got every, and I think they've been hit by COVID worse than any league in the country because of the regulations and the protocols of the states in which that conference was. They lost their whole summer, didn't even see their players, didn't have them on campus till the middle of September. The restrictions in that region of the country is so much more severe than maybe like anywhere else. I mean, compare it to even like the Texases, it's like we're in two different worlds. So therefore, these teams are all behind. And they're, you know, Oregon's been shut down for, it seems like, forever. Mick Cronin didn't see his team until September 29th. It was the first time he had his guys back on campus from when he let them go at the start of the pandemic. But how can a league with this great a tradition, the resources, the environments, like that league, USC, Evan Mobley, really, really good. And they're getting better. I have to admit, they protect the rim. They rebound the ball. He's finally getting touches. And I think Colorado, I think Pat Boyle does an incredible job with his team. And McKinley Wright is good, and Batty's a big physical guy. They've got experience. They play really, really unselfish basketball. But how could a league with that many resources be that mediocre?
I don't have an answer for that. I really don't. I Arizona, what are people saying? Because of the legal stuff, Southern California kids don't want to go to Arizona, so Miller's had to go with foreign kids. I honestly, I'll never understand it. And I'll ask you this. I think of the 13 winningest programs in his, I saw this somewhere. Somebody told me this. I can't remember. In the history of college basketball, not one of them are in the top 25. How's that? Are coaches being exposed a little bit?
It's amazing to me. I mean, it really is. I mean, you think about everything you would need. I mean, world-class research universities, magnificent campuses, tremendous budgets. They're building facilities out there now. For the California schools, great weather. You name it, everything you would need to be successful, traditions, television exposure. It's almost mind-boggling to me if you think about it. I mean, like, how is that possible? And yet, Gonzaga just rolls along. I mean, like, Gonzaga right now, and I think McCrone's going to do a really good job, you said, but Gonzaga right now is by and far the most prestigious program in the Western United States.
I agree. And
it has been for 10 years.
Tell me, I mean, again, I don't get why. I mean, you know what Mark Few told me the other day on the Sirius show that we do in the morning?
You get big time guests now. You're like the coach whisperer for the Saturday show.
I know. Saturday show's good. By the way, 9 to noon, Sirius XM, Channel 84. He said that if he has to recruit a kid, do you believe this? If he has to recruit a kid that needs him to be in the bleachers at Peach Jam and all these other places over and over again, if he needs that kind of attention, then he's not right for Gonzaga.
I think there's something to be said for culture. I mean, one, they get those kids overseas. I mean, again, Jalen Suggs is an unbelievable kid. Kid's a big-time football quarterback, right? I mean,
yeah,
right in Big Ten country, and he picks Gonzaga. I think that they in a lot of ways, although Jay Wright is sitting in the stands at Peach Jam and all those things, they in a lot of way are a destination now.
Right.
They're a destination. Like, kids are going to go, that's pretty cool what they got going on. That's a great environment. Let me ask you this. Is Gonzaga now, back in the day, the old Marquette?
Yeah. Right. Marquette, small Catholic school in the middle of the Midwest that was always competing, won national championship. That's a great, yes. That's ding, 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 ding.
That's what you have me on here for.
I figured sometime you're going to prove your worth here. And that was, yes. Because let's be honest, now different niches, right? Because Al McGuire always said, I don't recruit anybody with grass in their front yard and all that kind of stuff. Different niches, but a niche, right? And a national program. Yeah, absolutely.
And Al McGuire was different. And you know what? Fewey's different.
Different. Told me that he only gets up early. I said, are you one of those coaches that, like football coaches all act like they get to the office at 4:30 in the morning? He goes, I don't get up at 4:30 only to go steelhead fishing. And then he sent me a picture of his dog in his front yard sitting next to a moose, just laying on the grass with a moose.
Oh, no.
Phew. My wife sent me the same picture of me laying on the grass. She said, there's our moose.
Phew, he's hilarious. Like, I did these shows for Albert Hall in the summer. And like, so we had Phew on one time. And he's sitting on his deck and it's like looking out on this lake. Like, he's like the king in his,
court. Yeah. I mean,
or I'll send you a picture. He was whale watching once with his kids. Yeah. He sent me a video of him whale watching. Who whale watches?
I don't know, but he does. And it works, man, because he hadn't lost all year.
Wait a second. I think Coach Martin's rolling. And I want to find out from Coach Martin when he gets on about the vacuums, though. There's a big thing that I saw something the other day. He's into vacuums and leaf blowers. I have to get to the bottom of that. All right, before we get into the serious stuff, I'm gonna try to keep Doc under control, Coach. I mean, I'm gonna do the best I can. You know how those Indiana guys are.
I mean,
I saw that thing on the SEC Network. All right, what is it with you in vacuums and leaf blowers? Come on now.
It's I think the first thing, I wouldn't call myself a neat freak, man, but I just hate to see stuff when it's not in line. So just for years, man, I've always enjoyed vacuums. It started with the Org vacuum cleaner, man, years ago, and it just been upgrading ever since, man. I don't know what it is, man. And then like leaf blowers, I used to have the gas blowers, but I got tired of mixing the oil in the gas, and it just, I got a cord, I got a 100-foot cord, and I like that, man. I don't know what it is. I think it gives me a peace of mind. I don't know, but I enjoy it.
Hey, Coach, my wife is like this physical fitness nut, and she's like, we drove by somebody's yesterday, and this older guy was shoveling snow, and she's like, I need to jump out and shovel the guy's snow for him. I said, us old guys, we kind of don't mind blowing leaves and cutting grass and shoveling snow because it's peace of mind, right? So leave the old man alone. Let him shovel his snow.
I like it. I'll get right home from work and I'll just start going. It's like, and my wife said, well, you know the guy that's doing a lawn will be here tomorrow, but I just enjoy doing it.
No, Greenberg doesn't understand that.
I cut lawns and shoveled snow when I was
got his pinky out.
You're so full of crap, Doc. Hey, I like my snow blower now. I don't do the manual digging up the snow with my back. I'm old, man. But I said that snow blower makes you feel powerful. I mean, that snow blower, you fire that thing up and you spit it all over the place trying to get Jake to walk through the snow. It's the greatest. Will you ask something intelligent now? This is what I have to put up with, Coach.
Hey, yeah, I will. How about our guy, Seth? We've been talking about Tillman. Like, he's playing great. Like, really good. Talk about his development, Coach.
Well, obviously you guys have coached at a high level. You understand him. I remember Coach Katie said this when we were players and just, you know, didn't understand it because we were just players. And he would say, it takes big guys a little longer than guards. Obviously, they're very intelligent, but for whatever reason, they were always, you know, there's not many guys they can go up against in practice when they're big guys. So all those things. And so like in Jeremiah Tillman's case, a guy that works extremely hard, the things he's always done well is work hard, run the floor, a very coachable guy. Now, the other part is just to mature into a big man, what it means to be a big man, but also understanding what makes me successful and also what makes our team successful. And I think a lot of guys has to grasp that part because oftentimes you have how you perceive you want to play, how you think the game should be played. And I think that's the biggest key. Once he embraced that, because again, big heart, everybody loves him. And I just think the biggest key, man, just settling into the fact that I got to run the floor. I got to be great in my ball screen defense. I got to be an elite rebounder. I think all those things are coming true today.
Coach, you played for a guy that was a tough guy, obviously, in Coach Katie. You coach your team hard, not afraid to coach your team, but you give them a lot of love. Do you think we have a problem in the profession now in that sometimes guys are afraid to coach their guys because I don't know why you would. I mean, you can coach them hard if you love them up on the other side and they know you care. But I mean, like, how what has been your trick? Because I mean, your guys love you. You can see your guys play for you, man.
Well,
I've been in your practice. I know you're going to coach them hard.
And Coach, again, both of you guys have done it at a high level. I think that the truth of the matter is if you don't supposedly coach him hard, and I've always felt like it would, like I never thought Coach Katie was a tough guy. Now, was he tough? Yes. But what Coach Katie was saying to me, I heard that at home. And Coach Katie never degrade me or belittle me. So I want to be clear. So what he was saying, it was just like a family member talking to me, is it was an adult, an uncle, a father figure teaching and educating me. So I never took it in harm's way like he was mistreating me. So I think what happens, man, if you're not coaching your guys, that it means you truly don't love them. I mean, we can say that six different ways, but that means you really don't love them or care for them enough to give them the real life stuff. Because at some point, that ball will stop bouncing. And then where's the accountability? Where's his ability to be trustworthy and try to tell the truth every time? Where's his level of gratitude and appreciation? But not just that scholarship. Just because you're a talented player, man, you're still as grateful to have that scholarship. Where's his ability to have love for his teammates, to have compassion for that guy that doesn't play a lot but work just as hard? He's over there cheering for you in the sideline. So all those things, I try to help those guys understand because I saw what it was like for a single parent mom to work, make a job to make ends meet, that worked as a maid, that worked at a bar at night to make ends meet. So, man, just be grateful for what you have, man. Just because you're a talented player, nobody owes you nothing, man. Because on the flip side, I've seen a lot of great players today struggle to make ends meet because of how they treated people.
Great stuff.
And I got to tell you that I didn't hire assistant coach because of how he treated a waitress. You know what I mean? I didn't. I'm like, hey, you may be the greatest assistant coach ever, but I'm not having you treat anybody in my presence like that. That's, you know, hey, I am the only Indiana guy, though, by the way, on the Coach Katie call-a-thon. I know you're on the call-a-thon. You get calls from him. Like, I get three a day, Konzo.
Oh, man. You know, one thing about Coach, we'll definitely talk once a week, and it could be more, but he always calls after games. And then if Coach doesn't get me on, and Coach has a great ability of, he'll call you, and he's going to call to you and answer that call. Now, if you don't get it, he's going to call my administrative assistant. Where, you know, he's in practice or whatever. Coach is making that phone call. You better call it back.
He called me yesterday. I said, Coach, and I put him on the air. Like, I'm doing my radio show. I said, Coach, I'm on the freaking air. You call me every day at this time, and I'm on the freaking air. Oh, thank you, Double D. We'll see you later. When you let's take the basketball part of it, because you were a great player. Like, people I know, I remember people, I know you played with Big Dog and everybody loved Big Dog, but you were a great player. On the court, what did you take from Coach Katie, and what did you take from your playing, not your coaching, but your on the court playing that you use with your players today?
Well, the thing I took from Coach Katie, you know, he always said players, hard. We always had play hard on the back of our shorts. You know, again, Coach, we use a lot of words, cliches and all of it. Coach just always said, play as hard as you can play. And Coach, he never, you know, some coaches give you, I need you to get 10 rebounds. I need you to score this many points. And then Coach Katie always said, play as hard as you can play. And if you did that, if you were a walk-on, he would find some type of way to get you in the game because he felt like he was rewarding you. And I think off the court, just have high character. And I think for me as a player, having the opportunity to play with LaFonso Ellis in high school, and then also Glenn Robinson, I had a true appreciation of what elite level talent was. You know, guys that could score the ball, guys that played hard, guys that were, they brought their heart, had worked in their games. And for me, it was a joy. Glenn Robinson was also my roommate. It was a joy to see him score 30 points again. I wasn't jealous about that. I would always say, Glenn, I'm over here in the corner if you need me. You know, just because I took pride in playing defense and guarding the other guy's best player. I took pride in that. But I think we had a team that all we cared about was winning basketball games. And I'm not sure we see a lot of that. And I'm not taking anything away from anybody today, but I'm not sure we see a lot of the most important thing. Let's win this basketball game. We'll deal with the other stuff later. And I really enjoyed my teammates and I enjoyed winning.
All right, you got to give me a good Fonz story. Because, I mean, Fonz is my guy. I'm with him as much as I'm with my wife. You got to give me a good Fonz back in the day story. Because here's my thing. We know, we call Fonz, he's the nicest human being in the world. Anytime you're with Fonz, when you leave, you feel bad about yourself. Yes. Like, if you compare him to Dokic, it's really dangerous because, like, you're talking about two different ends of the spectrum. So, like, Fonz is like a 17 and 18-year-old. He couldn't have been as nice as he is now.
No.
Can't, you know what? Right? Now, and that's this story on off the records. I can give it to you two ways. So, I'll give you the one that's
the cleaned up one.
What Fonz would do to you, and this is crazy as it sounds, this is a thing back in our day, man. The guys do it all the time. Man, they walk up to you and they'd almost like gesture like they're hitting you below the belt. All of a sudden you just jump like, I mean, and you know, he was so big. He's like, man, come on, man. But everybody did, but that was his biggest thing because the thing about him, he was so intelligent, man. He was a bright guy, man. He really was, man. He was all about, and not to say I wasn't, but he was all about the academics, man. He knew the importance of that, man. But the other thing, too, on the funny side, you know, we'd have, like, dances and parties and that sort of thing. You know, Fonz, you know, he couldn't get a lot of pants that fit him at that time. So, you know, he flood. We called it flood when your pants too small. So, but no, it's hard to find a lot of tough stories about him because, again, he was a great teammate and really, he was a good guy back then. He was. He was a great guy and a great teammate.
Uwe Blob used to do that. Uwe hit me one time at a party. I tackled him on top of my car with about 30 people watching. If there were cell phones, we'd have been in jail. You know, I'm swinging. I'm like, you son of a... You know what I mean? Came up right from behind and yelled in German, gotcha. Whatever German for gotcha is. It's like, I don't know what was wrong with guys back then, but that was a big
deal. Crazy, man. It was.
Hey, you know, I don't want to get into the sacrifices necessarily that everybody's making with COVID. I want to kind of get into how you deal with it to keep guys in shape and sharp and getting better. How is that working?
Well, the one thing we would normally do, Dan, we would probably practice. I'd say, well, this time of year tapers off, but just say our average practice would be 2 hours and 15 minutes. That's stretching, film, everything. Well, now it's probably 1:30. We're done. Just to try to be as efficient as possible and get the guys in and out fresh. And we always say fresh legs, fresh minds, because we try to pride ourselves in playing extremely hard. But, man, we get in, we get out, we off the court. And then the other thing is, I've always been a guy, and I still try to work out, but not at the level of the guys. I'm doing it at. But if I feel fatigued, then we're shutting it down because I know how they feel. So it just might just be a walk through that day and just film and we're done. Because, again, I just try to get the pulse of the guys because a long season is hard. But we probably cut between 45, 50 minutes off our normal practice times.
Do you worry, though, Coach, that you worry that, like, in this environment, like we saw the thing happen the other day, Carolina beats Duke. They go out Franklin Street, guys aren't wearing masks. All of a sudden now they're shut down for a while because of protocol. Do you worry, like, all right, when they leave, you know, we all worried about our players after practice. I mean, like when that phone rang late, we all worried about our players. I mean, it's just the nature of parenting. You worry about your kids. I mean, it's two and the same. But now a bad decision could shut down your team for 2 weeks, could end your season, could who knows what could happen. How do you worry about the free time and keeping them making good choices, I guess?
I don't worry about the COVID piece because that's life stuff. It's just like you're trying to run from the flu. How do you do that? So I don't worry about that. What we talk about, guys staying out of harm's way, the parties and all those things that we should stay away from. I know you want to do it, the experience of being in college. I understand that, guys. But let's respect the space of everybody around us, not just this basketball program. If we get shut down for 3 weeks because we're doing the right thing, shut us down. You end the season because we're doing the right thing, end the season. I have no problem with that. But the worries for me come, and I'm not sure how much longer I can go in this profession. I said it respectfully, not that somebody's running me out, but just I worry too much about guys on the Friday, Saturday nights. For me, this is probably the best time because of COVID. You know they're not doing as much as they probably would have done in the past. Because you guys know we like parents when they get to us. I mean, I don't know if the outside world understand how much time, how much sleep we lose just because, hey, you get a call Friday, Saturday night, or what is this call about? You know, just so that part just really takes a physical toll on me and it makes my job hard. Now, it's not the preparing for games and all that. That's the beauty of it. It's that other part that we worry about as coaches, man. And so this has probably been the best it's ever been for me as far as not worrying because at least COVID keeps everybody at bay somewhat.
What I get, I honestly got people ask me all the time, you miss coaching? I say, yeah, I miss preparing for a game, but I don't miss the stuff you just talked about because it literally drove me nuts. I mean, it was like, man, I worry about these guys. And I understand what you're saying about COVID because they're smart, right? They pay attention. I mean, this isn't something that you have to trick them on, right? I mean, no. Exactly. You know. But, hey, moving forward, your league, you know, that's a mother, man. And when you look across the board of college basketball, how do you think college basketball and your league in particular, how do you think the games have gone this year?
One, we've got them off for the most part. I think we've probably got about 75% of the games off. So that part has been good. I mean, this is a tough league. And you're talking about guys that, you know, though some might be young in areas, but you're still talking about supreme talents. And just the youth part might get in the way of some guys, but it just they're always hard games because no matter what, no matter the roster, there's probably one or two guys that have a great opportunity of playing at the highest level when the season is over, when it's all said and done. So your preparation has to be high. I mean, this is always a good league, in my opinion, Dan. And every night it's a dogfight.
Guys, I got a question. Like your league, you just finished playing Alabama, all right, which kept, you know, obviously the opportunity to win the league championship kind of alive. Like going into that game, I mean, like, all right, so Alabama, they play this unique style, all right? They're going to spread it out. They're going to fly it down the court. They're going to shoot a ton of threes. They're going to, you know, basically play five out with, you know, all kinds of different spread ball screens. like when you play a team like that, what like what's the one thing, because they are different. So you're not simulating that in your practice in the same way. Like what was one or two of the things that you said, you guys are right. Alabama's different. Yeah, I understand that they play this way, but are we going to stay true to our principles? Or are we going to say, you know what, we're running the lanes with them, or, you know, we're not over helping? Like, how do you approach a team that plays that differently?
Well, Nate has done a tremendous job, and I enjoy watching style. So there's a few things we tried to pick up from watching a year ago. But I think the biggest thing with them, what makes them unique, they have talent. That part is understood. But I think Herb Jones create so many advantages for them and disadvantages for the opponent, because you're talking 6'8", 6'9", legit, can get off the bounce, get to the rim, improve his three-point shot, can defend any position on the floor, so he cleans it up. And in my opinion, I think they're an elite defensive team. I think he has a lot to do with it. Of course, what Nate has put in their program, I think he has a lot to do with it because of what he demands. But I think for us, they shoot. I think where you fall asleep is they'll make a dagger three. Like Reese, for example, against us, Reese he's averaging 5.2 points a game as their center position, but he can shoot threes. Well, that's 5.2 points. It's not as if it's 22.5. So what happens, he might make one or two, but what happens as a big guy, he makes a three, boom. Then all of a sudden you close out, he drives and dunk it with his left hand. Then all of a sudden somebody help, boom, that's where they get you at. So for us, if he makes 20 points with threes, he makes 20 points with threes, but we cannot allow the driving in the lane. That's what we did in the second half late. We allowed the driving in the lane because we got excited with the lead and we lost sight of getting back on defense and continue to build that wall. That's where they get you at. The drives in the lane, they finish it. And I think what they have, and not many teams in America have, they have five guys that can put on the floor and get to the rim and can make a shot. That's what makes it hard.
No, nobody listens to this, okay? It's just three guys talking. Nobody downloads this. Nobody gives a shit about it. Okay. So how nice is it? I mean, I'm just looking around here. How nice is it that Kentucky's falling on their ass? Come on.
He's so crazy. He's so sick.
You know, man, I think it says a lot about our league, man. I really do. And I'm hopeful in the future, and Cali get that thing where he need to get it to. I think in the future, I hope people respect the league, the fact that it's a good league. And I think oftentimes on the surface, we assume that Kentucky's up or down, and that's how the league goes. Of course, it's a good league, and I think everybody prepare and perform. And you know how it is, Dan. You got to talk. You played at a high-level university for a long time. That target is on your back. People are coming, and they never stop coming.
That's a good answer, man. That's a good answer. God damn, that's a good answer.
Hey, but do you think, in just in general, that we're seeing, whether it's COVID year or not a COVID year, maturity, toughness trumps right now having that many inexperienced players that really are learning how to play hard, learning how to share the ball, learning how to trust? I mean, like, look, Cal's going to get good players, but just in general, we look at college basketball today, the teams that are winning at the highest level right now are teams that more look like your team than teams that look like Duke right now in Kentucky. Now, is it, you know, is that a snapshot? Is that because this year is different? Or do you think that getting old, staying old, sounded good as a little rhyme and reason, like Mike Bray used to say, but you look at the last five Final Fours, getting old and staying old are the teams that are playing.
I think your team. You guys know maturity is very important. You, of course, you have to be good enough. That's first and foremost. You have to be good enough. And maturity helps if they're all on the same page and they're together. And I think the teams that are winning, they're doing that, they have that. And I just think the other part, man, with some places you don't have the fan base that you would normally have. And I think what happens, and I say this respectfully, I think that fan base, not only energy from the fans, but I think the game's officiated different when they feel how the crowd is moving. And that's why I always say to officials, man, I don't care what happens on the periphery. Officiate the game on the floor. That's all I'm asking you. Because you can get caught up in that other stuff and all of a sudden that game shift on you. So I think that it's not just the fans, but it's also the officiating of the game that's on the floor.
No, man, whenever I say that, I get an email from ESPN, hey, can you cut that stuff out?
But I think it's true.
It is. It is absolutely the truth. And I don't think there's any denying that. I mean, it's human nature, is it not?
Yes. Yes. And I'm not saying that like some officials is doing a bad job for the team. I just think they get caught in the moment and they make certain calls. And I always tell us guys, just officiate what you see on the floor.
Do you then change because it's so quiet and because everything you say now gets heard? Do you change the way you talk to officials and even the way you talk to players?
Well, I've never been disrespectful to any officials because what I say all the time, those guys are men just like me, and I'm respect their space as a man. I try to communicate with them. And maybe that's why I struggle even trying to get a technical call foul, because I don't, and again, everybody has their own style. I'm not cussing a guy because I want to respect you as a man, you know. But I say what I say, so I'm not necessarily, I don't do that. Actually, the last game, and I do more yelling to our players, not at them, because I try to be like a sixth man for our guys. I'm talking to them, Boston, they did it. And I had to get some tea after the last game because I couldn't even speak. You know, so you do more of that. But I don't really worry about what I say because I'm not necessarily saying nothing that's degrading or belittling anybody. So I don't get consumed with that.
Because what we've seen, like I've seen this in the games that I've called, players are getting technical fouls. Like Trent Frazier shoots a shot, yells cash, boom, technical foul. You know what I mean? So it was incredible what I've seen with that, because we hear more in these, yeah. You know.
Yes.
You do.
We spend time in the preseason with our players about that, what you're saying. The word, you know, because there's a certain word young guys use, boom, dunk on you. They use that word. It's like, we got to stay away from all of that, man, because, again, they made that an emphasis with the officiating to call it a technical. So you just got to be careful of that. We spend a lot of time in those areas as well.
Hey, Dan, you know what the deal is? I just realized this. This is going to be a great observation for this conversation.
Oh, boy.
Oh, you're going to like this. Dockage, you could grow a beard, but I thought your beard couldn't become close to looking as good as Cunzo's beard.
Oh, no, but he puts that.
That's
he
the best beard in college basketball.
No, he puts that gray, anti-gray stuff just for men. He got just for men in that thing.
I'm just telling you. I mean, that's the best beard in college basketball.
Oh, Dan, don't do that, Dan.
And Dan's throwing shade on my man like that.
Seth, I'm looking at that.
That's an Indiana Purdue thing.
I'm painting that bad.
No, Dan. Hey.
Conzo, you're the best, man. You are the best. Thanks
it
for proves taking
once
time.
Again, hey, Coach, it proves once again, those Indiana guys are all
I got great relationships with those guys, man. You know, and guess for me, once we're on the floor, it's a battle. After that, man, I got a good relationship with Calvin Chaney, and that was actually the guy that broke my nose in the game down with an elbow. And it's what it is, man. You leave it on the floor, man. Let the chips fall where they may.
All right, hey, last question. How did you put up with my the maid of honor of my wedding was Dick Satterfield's sister? How did you put up with Satterfield?
Good man. He's a Purdue legend, a great man. He's a really good man. He does a lot for people, does a lot for the community, Major. He's an exceptional person.
Yeah, he is. Great family. Yeah.
Thanks, Conzo. You're the best.
Thank you, I appreciate it. Anytime. Thank you.
That was really fun.
That was good.
Yeah.
If you grew a beard, your beard wouldn't even close to looking as good as that.
I can't. I'm trying a little bit, apparently. But Seth, you know, some of us are just naturally handsome. We don't need anything on our faces. You understand that. I mean, it's just, all right, let me go through a couple of things before we leave. You ready?
So freaking hard outside. It's ridiculous again.
You ready? NCAA tournament, North Carolina State, in or out?
North Carolina, in.
Did I say state or what did I say?
Yeah, you said state, but I cleaned it up for you. That's what
No,
I did.
No. North Carolina in. Indiana, in or out?
In.
Minnesota, in or out?
In.
Clemson, in or out?
Oh, Clemson's going to be like a sixth seed. You look at the wins they have?
I know, but they've been getting their brains beat.
No, they haven't. They've won like three in a row. Come on.
Lately. All right. Wichita State, in or out?
Only if they win their league, and I don't think they're going to beat Houston.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not. Okay. Georgia Tech, in or out?
That's a hard one. It all depends on how they look at those first two early losses. I'm going to say out.
Oklahoma State, in or out?
I'm going to say in.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to say in.
TCU, in or out?
Out.
UConn, in or out?
in. And Boatwright's going to come back hopefully next week for them.
He is?
Book night, I should say.
Oh, then they'll be really good. St. John's, in or out?
There, I say in this moment today, as I sit here looking at the snow just take over my driveway, I'm going to say in, but they can't afford another bad loss. They're playing well, man. I'll tell you one thing. Mike Anderson's teams are so underrated in their ability to pass the ball. If you go watch them, forget it, they play hard and they turn you over and you can't simulate what they do or not. They pass and cut. They pass the ball. It's the most underrated part of what they do.
How many losses does Iowa right now have in the Big Ten? Do you know? Don't look.
I won't look. I think it's five.
Yep. Yep. Rutgers in or out?
Oh, Rutgers is in. Rutgers, yeah. You talk about one of the outlier team? Rutgers is my sleeper Final Four team.
Rutgers been through some ish, and now they're starting to play. I'll give you another outlier team, Western Kentucky.
Yeah, you know, you're high on Western Kentucky.
I'm high on them after watching them play. All right. If they don't win the league, is a team like 11-2, they just lost, though. There's two lost teams in their league. Cleveland State's 14-2 in their league. And I think, again, 11-2 is Toledo. They got no chance, right? You got to win the league.
I think Toledo's got a shot. I mean, Cleveland State lost a game early in the season to Ohio University by 100.
I know.
Which is a great job. Let me tell you something. As you know, when you get whacked like that, keeping your guys understanding, working. Coach Gaines has done a great, great, great job with his team. But no, they're not. No, from that conference, unless they win their league, no.
Missouri Valley, both Drake and Loyola Chicago in?
In.
Both of them, right?
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, yeah. And they'll win a game.
They could. USC, UCLA, Colorado, Oregon. In, right?
I think those four, that's it.
That's it, right? Because Stanford's
not high on Stanford. I'm not high on Stanford. I don't think – I mean, like, who have they beaten?
I agree. All right. Ole Miss.
Out. No,
Georgia.
Out. Not even in the conversation.
Georgia's 5-6, 12-6 overall. I know they play that, you know, schedule, but –
they're not on conference schedule?
They play nobody.
All right. End of conversation. You're going through all these records.
I like it.
You working on a parlay or something?
Huh?
Are you working on a pick eight or something?
No, I just think it's interesting. I think people want to know, so I just figure, you know, what the hell. All right. Anything else?
No, the world's greatest podcast never disappoints. Tom Brady is the most gifted human being in the world because he's basically nothing bad ever happens to him.
Man.
And by the way, for all the people that say it's either Tom Brady or Bill Belichick, Bill Belichick begat Tom Brady.
What does that mean? Define that for me.
I mean, Tom Brady was what? A third round draft choice? What was he drafted?
Sixth
round draft choice. All right. So they drafted him. They developed him. They made him, helped him develop to a championship caliber quarterback. Belichick didn't forget how to coach this year. He had a crappy team. You need good players. Everyone knows you need good players to win. All right, but a good coach takes those good players and puts them in position to play to their strengths and play. You know, football's the ultimate team sport. You know, you've got defensive team, your offensive team, your special teams, you know. So, I mean, like Brady's Brady. I mean, the guy's gifted. I mean, he has the ability to raise everyone around them, their commitment. But, like, people like, well, you know, Belichick was nothing without Brady. Stop. Enough. Really? I mean, like, that's, like, stupid. End of conversation. I just had to get it off my chest.
Last thing. Well, Belichick, the GM, certainly screwed it up by getting rid of Brady.
Yeah, he's probably not the greatest GM in America. But, I mean, I personally think that coaches should work with the general manager, but coaches should never be the general manager. They get too emotionally involved in things.
I agree with that. That's hard.
Hard to separate yourself.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, man. Great stuff. Taylor, we got
a long way today, by the way, because you finally started to agree with me.
Took a while.
Took a while. It's been an 8-year romance.
Hey, Grand Canyon.
Out. And well, they can win their league. It's going to be them in New Mexico State, but I don't think so. I don't think they if they don't win it, I don't think they get in.
All right.
That was one of the great world's greatest podcasts in the history of life. Hey. Whenever you rate your podcast, just give us a 5 because that's who we are.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.